Welcome to the Strong Starts podcast with your hosts, Jessica Whitehead and Sarah Gerber-Kai.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Strong Starts podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for joining us. And thank you to everybody who has also joined us on social media at Strong Starts Podcast on TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. We got some fun stuff going on there. So if you haven't checked it out already, please do. And today we're going to dive in a little bit into a topic that's important to both of us. When we start talking about systems and strengthening tier one, we first need to strengthen and build the capacity of our people. You know, more than any curriculum or behavior plan you're going to write, it's really going to be your people that determine the success of your tier one systems for behavior support. And, you know, when we look into how we build capacity, we're often thinking about professional development and coaching, which is really great. But how do we ensure that that coaching that we give people actually gets put into practice? And this happens through our accountability systems.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think about giving a teacher a behavior plan I wrote for a student. I spend hours writing it. I wrap it up in a little bow for them and hand it over. And when I check back later... Yes. When I check back later, the plan may not be implemented as I intended it to be. And we can approach accountability for that a few different ways. So the first thing we can talk about is enforcing the rules. That's what some people know accountability as. You didn't follow the plan. You need to implement this plan, or this is going to happen. We're going to take some sort of action. But we can also approach this in a seek to understand model where we talk about what barriers may be preventing this plan from being implemented. The teacher might have 25 students in the classroom, including those with IEPs, behavior plans, language needs, and who knows what other challenges are in the classroom. But does the teacher have the resources, the skills? Was the plan clear, easy to follow? Did the teacher even have buy-in into the plan? And I can also think about what I can do differently to better support the teacher and successful implementation of that plan.
That's a great example. And, you know, you highlighted two different types of accountability systems there. We're going to actually talk about three of them today. And one of those that you talked about, that was the first one, was that default, that traditional accountability system, which is what we tend to default to. And it's that hierarchical system. There's punishments and rewards. And this system feels very comfortable and familiar to us because, you know, when we can shift that blame to one person or like check a box and say that they were held accountable, we feel a sense of relief. I did my job. It's their fault. I identified the problem. And the same thing happens sometimes with our students. You know, the student shows a problem behavior. I send them to the office for a consequence. Now they're going to get that consequence. And I did what I needed to do. I did my job.
Yeah. And we see that often. But what we need to know is discipline is not the same as accountability. When we discipline someone, we're enforcing rules. We're applying correction. And it's typically done after a mistake is made, after there is an error. The problem is we can't discipline skills into people. So what happens when we don't address the underlying barrier or skill deficit is that we don't see improved behavior over time. And in the process, we, you know, break trust, we instill shame, and that will potentially lead to resentment, apathy, and early burnout. And we're seeing burnout all over the place in education.
So what do we do? It's a huge problem.
It is a huge problem. And I'm seeing it. I'm feeling it. You can walk in the hallways and feel it. What we can do is we can shift our mindset and systems toward a team-based model of accountability. I'm not accountable just to the big boss or supervisors. I'm accountable to my team and know that we depend on each other. I can depend on them. They can depend on me. This is a model centered on trust within a team. Teams that recognize capacity within each other, they can capitalize on strengths and address problems through just having frank conversations. And if you've read Sam Silverstein's work, he wrote the book, The Accountability Theory. He does a great job of explaining accountability. In a sense, accountability is honoring our commitments to people and ourselves by living our values with integrity.
Oh, I love that. And so, Jessica, let's kind of like actualize this or operationalize it, what does it look like to be accountable to your team? And one way that we can do that is through collective ownership. And an example would be like when we're talking about data. Are we looking at those metrics all together as a team? Do we frame that data conversation not in a shame and blame kind of a way, but as a representation of a system that we're all creating together all the time? And when we talk about student behavior in particular, we can ask ourselves, you know, what are we doing as a system to create and reinforce this behavior? And how can we shift what we all do collectively to shape that behavior? That's where we're going to dive into a little bit of our tier one work. But first, we have to all take accountability all together about what's happening in our systems.
And what I'm hearing with that, Sarah, is it kind of matters how we're framing these things when you're talking about this piece with this collective ownership and how we're talking about that together.
Yeah, absolutely. And that open communication and feedback amongst the team members is a second way that we can build a team accountability system. How we're talking to each other matters. So like you said, when we're having those conversations, the way in which we talk to each other really matters. So, you know, as a support professional, as a support educator, I've traditionally come into classrooms and I take sole responsibility for a student's behavior. Well, why do I do that? You know, it gives me some sense of relief. I believe that I have some specialized knowledge or skills, like, you know, something special about my role means that I can come in and I can help a student who is struggling with their behavior.
But developing, you get to be like a superhero in that situation.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. And there's something special, and it gives me a sense of relief. Like, okay, I have control over this. I got this. But what ends up happening is that then that problem behavior is addressed in a silo. And developing team accountability requires that we stop this pattern of behavior, this pattern of just relieving that anxiety through some reactive measure, and really digging into the discomfort, having those tough but kind conversations about what it is that's shaping the behavior and how the whole team can take responsibility for that change. And then the third kind of way that we can build team accountability, or at least the third we're going to talk about today, is connection and mutual support. And this one is really important. When there's some breakdown in a team's functionality, that can often be resolved through having some conversations and seeking to understand. And that's what you mentioned in your example, is asking those questions. Okay, what happened? How are you feeling about it? How do you think your actions are affecting the team or affecting what it is, the work that we're doing? Just saying things like, hey, I noticed this is going on. Like, I noticed, I don't know, I've noticed it's been hard for you to come into our meetings, like in the mornings, or to join our meetings in the mornings. What's going on? And, you know, there could be some concern that this might permit behaviors from like happening among our staff and everything. And we're not trying to be permissive or like relieve somebody of that personal responsibility. But by cultivating that team accountability and that culture of addressing problems within the broader context of like, hey, people have lives, they have their own lives, things happen, life happens. It also is building trust. And this is really crucial if we're going to strengthen our tier one systems, because at the heart of tier one is consideration for the broader context of our work. We want to mirror that in how we're talking to our staff.
Oh, yeah. And if you are seeking to understand, it comes off a lot differently than if you're just saying, hey, you haven't done this, this, and this. You need to do these things or this is going to happen, versus taking the time to really talk about that why and addressing those barriers, building that capacity. It does have a different feeling when you're part of a team, and that's the approach.
That's so true. I mean, just human to human, it feels very different. I feel cared for. I feel looked after.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to be more likely to be able to give that back to the team.
Yeah. And so, however, there's a piece of responsibility that goes with it. Yes. And it's not all just about, you know, giving others grace. You also have to take some responsibility for yourself. So one goal of team accountability is to foster a feeling of accountability to the team within each of the team members. And that feeling of accountability should not be, you know, just living, this shouldn't be just outside of the group. We're trying to get rid of the top-down boogeyman type of accountability. Feeling should be within each of us as motivation, shared values, and a confidence in our team's efficacy. So to get to this place of felt accountability, we do need to cultivate our self-awareness of how we are thinking and feeling about work, whether or not we're conscious of it. Cognitive behavior theories of psychology would tell us that our thoughts and our feelings are always shaping our behaviors. So it's really a mindset that we're having and how we're thinking and the self-talk we have, the stories we have in our head. And
that makes a lot of sense.
It does, because we can get into these thought traps. And it's common. I do it. I get into a thought trap. And some examples of thought traps that people feel are, oh, it's not my fault. Or I always have to do everything around here. I could do more. Why didn't I try harder? I should have worked over the weekend. And this would have worked if I could rely on Sarah, but I can't.
Yeah.
And so we get into these traps in our thinking, and sometimes it just spirals and our thinking feeds off of itself, you know, these negative thoughts and our attitude and what we are bringing to the table.
Yeah, absolutely. And those thought traps, you know, they're a form of self-protection. So we really want to, like, whether or not we're conscious of it, we're trying to avoid those feelings of shame and guilt because they're really uncomfortable. And they hurt at our sense of self. And so we have these thoughts that go through our mind, not intentionally. They're just thoughts that we have for self-protection. And so when we're more aware of them, like you said, when we cultivate that self-awareness, then we can really address them and get at personal responsibility.
Well, yeah, because owning it is not really easy, right? When you have to look internally, that can be very hard. And sometimes it's hard for people to accept that maybe they need to look in within themselves.
Yeah, definitely. But that is really the human piece of it. And when we're talking about the different types of accountability systems, there's a third type that I was hoping we could talk about today, and that's relational accountability. And this was a new concept to me. In preparing for this episode, I was looking at some kind of different types of accountability systems, how researchers have framed it. And there's one social researcher, Sean Wilson, who uses this term to describe how social researchers are accountable to all the people that they come into relationship with. And Sean Wilson was doing work like ethnographic research within Indigenous populations. And so when this term is used, Wilson's using this term to describe how social researchers are responsible to the people that they, not just like their colleagues, but also the people that they're studying and that they're learning about. And so when we think about this in the context of education, how does this look? Well, let's say that I rolled out a new method of tier one data collection. I want to screen all classrooms for behavior skill development needs. It's pretty common practice when we're doing our tier one foundational work. But let's say that only 50% of our teachers respond. This is a situation I think a lot of people can relate to.
Sometimes getting
data is hard sometimes.
Oh,
you
so
know that
hard.
Better than anyone. And, you know, when we have kind of low return on data collection, that's a good indicator of low accountability in our system. So how could relational accountability help? By adding a moral component to our accountability, by kind of aligning the work that we're doing to values and ethics so that people feel more buy-in. I care about this work. I value it. It aligns to like how I see myself and my morals and ethics. I have more buy-in to do it. And so increasing the relational accountability is a little bit different. It's going to use some of those same tools that we talked about with team accountability. But a really important foundational piece to this is making a strong start to grow trust within our team from day one by creating a structure for relationship building with our staff. When problems arise, I'm going to say something early. I'm not going to let it fester and grow. I'm going to seek advice from other staff members, and I'm going to really listen intently and deeply to their ideas and try to understand where it is that they're coming from.
Oh, wait. So we're not just going to hold on to grudges and all these negative feelings for the rest of our lives because of the one time someone did something?
No, we are not. We're going to use those same restorative practices, those same restorative principles that we would with students. We're going to use those with our colleagues as well. We're going to let it go. We talked about it.
Yeah, my husband might say something different. Like he might say, well, Jessica, practice what you preach because you hold on to stuff for a while.
Oh, that could be a whole other episode.
Right.
It's all the barriers that get in the way of applying these things in all the areas of our lives. And we are by no means perfect at this.
Absolutely not.
It is a try and try again and fail and try again. but, you know, a lot of these things that we're talking about, these are things that we are also talking about with our students, having a structure for relationship building, using restorative principles when problems arise, you know, showing people that we value their time by coming prepared, eliciting feedback. These are all things that we could also do with our students. So practicing these principles among our teams can actually help trickle some of that down to our students. But anyway, we'll get into more of that with our tier one work as in future episodes. But we're also going to seek to understand. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I would highly recommend checking out Brené Brown for some more ideas on trust building. She talks a lot about that and is much better at talking about that than I am. But we can create some strong starts to our accountability systems when we really take the time to learn the values and the needs of the people that we work with. I think is really at the heart of relational accountability. When we learn what matters to other people, we can try to meet their needs within the system through those relationships in our teams. And when possible, we can align the work that we're doing to their strengths and values, and that increases buy-in and accountability.
Oh, for sure it does, because I know that when we go against our values or something we're doing goes against our values, that definitely causes me to put up a wall, right? Armor up, as Brené Brown would say. And so when we can learn what matters to people, hopefully we can weave that in, acknowledge it, show that we also value it. That way it reduces the chance of those walls being put up and other people armoring up as well. And it just helps that communication and that feeling of having a positive relationship with other people that you work with.
Absolutely. And when we're cultivating our self-awareness to try to take more personal responsibility, that's one of the things to consider too. It's like, hey, am I armoring up because this is going against something that really matters to me and against my values? And then bring that to your team. That's a really great way to build trust within your team.
Yeah. And I know it's interesting when Sarah and I were with a group of people talking about our values too. And, you know, when we say one of our values, the other person's like, oh, yeah, for sure, that's her. And so it was nice, though, to hear it articulated and thinking, oh, you know, that's why she does some of these things, because her value is this. And, and it really just helped us become a little more cohesive to understand that about each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so let's just dive into a real story, because we did promise you real stories. And we're going to talk about a student and just our experience with that. And we're talking about a younger student who consistently communicated through big behaviors in the classroom. And these behaviors were physically aggressive. There was some words that were said that I didn't know a little guy like this could say. And it did cause some disruption to the learning environment. So this amazing teacher worked with the student, followed their referral process to the intervention team, and just checked all the boxes. This teacher did everything she was supposed to do. And as a team, we developed interventions, collected data, and referred the student for a special education evaluation. So at that time, the team determined that the student, and there's many steps along the way, so this is a short version of this of the story. And I assure you, steps were not missed. I'm just condensing.
Yes.
And over time, it was determined that the student would benefit from being in a separate setting for 100% of the time. And it was not an easy decision for the team to make. And there was a long road that led to that. Yes. But we did move systematically from tier one interventions, tier two interventions to tier three interventions. And he was making progress. His problem behaviors mm-hmm. reduced, but he did communicate that he wanted to be back in class with his peers. It is a lonely feeling to be separated. I think anyone would feel that way. But his peers were asking about him. That was the coolest part, is even though all this stuff happened in the classroom, peers were asking for him. They wanted him back. They wanted to play with him. And as a staff, we had to hold ourselves accountable for the student and what the student was feeling, what the student was going through, and what other students were going through. And the teacher, I will say that too. I missed that part. She also wanted him back. She was asking, you know, what we can do for that. So it was neat that we had this team just wrapping around this student. But it did cause some deep reflection in our team. And it wasn't mm-hmm. an easy reflection to have. We had to sit down and examine our systems and practices to determine what we could do better for the student. Because even though it was working in a sense that his problem behavior was reduced, it wasn't working for the student as a whole person.
Right.
Yeah. We formed a relationship with him. He told us what was important to him, being in class with his friends. And when we know that someone values, right, something, we have to answer to them. We have to acknowledge that. And I think once we started acknowledging that feeling for him and working to make that happen, we did see a difference in our relationship with that student.
Yeah, and that really helped kind of create some relational accountability with him. And it's not like we weren't holding ourselves accountable earlier on. We were just really holding ourselves accountable. Like, it was more of that traditional model. Like, we knew the checklist to do. We knew what we had to do. We knew what policy said and everything. And so we were just kind of moving through and holding ourselves accountable there. And then we were holding ourselves accountable to our team. But then we really shifted to holding ourselves accountable to what was important to this student.
Yes. And that was hard, right? When we talk about accountability, we felt good. Oh, yeah, we did all these checkboxes. Oh, we finally mm-hmm. we got him some help, the support he needed in this different setting. You know, the intent was great. The impact was varied. There was a good impact in some ways, and in some ways it was difficult. Mm-hmm. And so we realized it had to start in tier one. So to get him back in gen ed, the way how he wanted, what he valued, mm-hmm. we had to say, okay, then we have to do something different in the environment. And we thought about what we could do at the tier one level to support the student and maybe any other student who could benefit from those strategies. When we talked to his gen ed teacher, she was on board. And we were so lucky. We have a teacher, and we have many teachers that we work with. And this teacher was like, yeah, let's do it. We began to work
on amazing.
Mm-hmm. Amazing what we could do in the classroom. For example, the student often used a regulation space. So the teacher set one up in the classroom, no hesitation. Mm-hmm. And we realized that not only this student could use it, but any students who needed it could use it as well. It wasn't just his tool. It became a part of what was available to all students because everyone may need to regulate sometimes. I know sometimes I need to regulate.
Mm-hmm. No, that's the magic of reflecting on tier one after you've already tried some of the tier two and tier three, is that you really start to uncover, hey, this is actually good for all students. And even if it isn't, like, even if students don't use it, it's not hurting them.
No, it's not hurting them to have it in the room. And other accommodations were also put in place. But the true change required us to go deeper than accommodations. And when we talk about deeper, we're talking about even the systems in the classroom, the instruction in the classroom, and how it could be inclusive for everyone within that system. And when we look at the student, he also had some outside services and he had this specific tool that he used for regulation and it was working in his outside service. So the teacher worked really hard to integrate that tool into her SEL lessons. It didn't add to her day or take away from her day. It was just weaved seamlessly into those lessons. And it became not just what this one student used, but something we all used. And it benefited him. It benefited the other students in the classroom. It developed this sense of belonging, this sense of understanding within how the whole classroom worked and how all the students came together.
Yeah. And it felt, I know we as a staff had this felt sense of, oh, wow, the work that we're doing, it now aligns. It aligns to what's important to us as well and to our values.
Mm-hmm. And it did. And I think that was the big thing. It wasn't just what this student valued. As a team, we all agreed that our values lie within, you know, having a sense of belonging for all, not just students, mm-hmm. but staff and everyone who worked in the system. We wanted learning for all and inclusivity. And it felt good to find a way to get that to happen. And it actually, you know, kind of created this snowball effect and picked up. And it really guided some of the work we started doing within our system.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's why we really wanted to talk about accountability early on in the show, is because it's really going to underpin a lot of what we're talking about with Tier 1 practices.
Oh, this is where it started, for sure.
Yes.
And Sarah and I debated, what is the first? We have so many things we can talk about when we talk about setting up systems. But really, the foundation of those systems that we put in place starts with who's in the system. When we have that relational accountability in the work we do, we value each other and design systems that support everyone within the system. We start by asking what we can do from the very beginning to build a strong foundation and create a safe, trusting environment for all.
Yeah. So thank you all for joining us on this journey. Thank you for joining us with this episode, and we will just build on that strong foundation from here.
Absolutely. And remember to find us at Strong Starts Podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and Facebook, or you can email us at strongstartspodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you guys. Until next time.